Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. Now here's Underground History with host Chelsea Rose.
You're listening to Underground History, a collaboration between Jefferson Public Radio and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and each episode we take a deep dive into little-known aspects of history in our region and beyond. Much of my recent work has overlapped with the history and construction of the railroad through this area. Decisions made in the 1880s could make or break communities, and many of these choices still impact our region today. But my expertise doesn't come close to today's guest. John Signer is a railroad historian that literally wrote the books on the Siskiyou Line connecting Ashland to Yreka and points beyond. I asked John to join me today to discuss the last train over the Siskiyous, which ended an 139-year run of train travel over the mountains connecting California and Oregon. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I've a complicated relationship with this story because as much as I grumble about not being able to hop on Amtrak to Portland, the abandonment of proposed lines and the anemic use of the ones that were built led to many fruitful archaeological investigations that I would not have been able to access were the route running full speed for all these years. But I wanted to have you start by giving us a brief overview to our listeners why the railroad through this area has been so spotty and ultimately not been as efficient as other sections of the line.
Yeah, well, I could give you the quick basic story. It was the original line from San Francisco to Portland, opened in December 1887 at Ashland. It was the main line until 1926 when they built the line via Klamath Falls and the Cascade Line, and everything went that way, all the passenger. But it still had a passenger train until about 1951 called the Scoot, went from Dunsmuir to Medford, and it was a very, very strong railroad right up through when I was working between 1977 and the late 1980s. I was a conductor and a brakeman over there a lot. And we were getting 7,200 ton trains out of White City every day of just lumber and paper products. And it was really going concern. But its latest trip that is supposed to be the last run on the Siskiyou Line over the mountains there, it's not the first last run. January 1980, they had the bridge at Hornbrook collapsed under the helpers on one of those big heavy trains. And the Siskiyou Line was under quarantine. They couldn't run trains. And there was some speculation that was the end of the Siskiyou Line, but they did rebuild. Anyway, August 2nd, 1991, Southern Pacific shut down the Siskiyou Line between Montague and Bellevue, which is right there outside of Ashland, up where that old sawmill was at the south end of town. And then, of course, then they reopened it with the Corp in June 1995. So it's been up and down, up and down. The one thing that is the Corp does not have the power to dismantle the railroad because it's owned by the Union Pacific. They just leased it. So that brings the question whether UP may continue to try to serve Medford or not. I don't know.
But, and the recent closure was prompted by the closure of the mill down there in Weed or Yreka. Is that correct?
Yeah, was it Weed? Yeah, and Roseburg Forest Products. They had a peeler mill and some other things. They would ship peeler material up to Roseburg at Dillard, Oregon, on the Siskiyou Line, where they would make plywood out of it.
And when you said that they had, was it the Scoot, the passenger train that went to the 50s? Was that mainly just for tourism or was it, because I remember seeing
in those days, you know, up to about 1951, Southern Pacific was providing basic passenger accommodations on most of its lines. There was a Greyhound bus strike, I think, in 1951, and it prolonged the life of the Scoot. It was trains 327 and 328. But right after that strike, they got a permission to abandon it. Everybody had cars.
Oh, man, I wish they'd bring it back. I would take it.
Never did see that. That predates me.
Do you think it's just not really possible for this section of the line to have a new revitalized career as for passenger trains or other stuff because of the amount of infrastructure improvements it would take? Or do you think that if somebody came along with an idea of people or goods that they wanted to shuttle back and forth, it would be possible to revamp the lines?
The railroad itself has 132-pound welded rail, which is full main line capacity. I mean, because of those heavy trains we ran with the heavy locomotives, they beefed it up quite a bit. I mean, I haven't looked at it lately, but in the mountains, it's been totally rebuilt. Out in the flats in the Shasta Valley and elsewhere, they have cinder ballast, which is not the best, and lighter rail, perhaps. I'm not sure about that. But I do know on the mountain, there was heavy rail. The big problem with the Siskiyous is the tunnels and the curvature to some degree. Even certain locomotives were restricted from going over the Siskiyou Mountains in my time. So I'm not sure if long passenger cars would be a good idea. Because they're usually 90-foot passenger cars. I'm not sure they'd fit through Tunnel 14, which is the big loop up there.
That's a good point. You definitely would want to make sure they could fit through the tunnels.
The tunnels were built in the 1880s, and so they were good enough for a boxcar and a 60-foot locomotive, but I'm not so sure about a standard-length passenger car. And there was high-wide detectors everywhere to check for things all along the railroad. But we used to go to Ashland from Dunsmuir, where we originated. And then in March 1987, we were extended to Medford, so we started going to Medford. Still all that business. So.
You're listening to Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and today we are talking about the history and potential abandonment of the Siskiyou Line. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Shasta Division Archives. So you and your colleagues, if I remember correctly, you saved these important documents about the construction of this line from destruction and have made them available for scholars like me and the interested public down there in Dunsmuir. Can you speak a little bit about those records and how you found them and what you've been doing to protect them?
Basically, I was working on the railroad as a conductor, and one day I come into Dunsmuir on a train, and they had this big roll-up semi-truck-sized dumpster in front of the engineering office, and they were throwing all this stuff away, and there was a light rain. And I had previously gotten to know the division engineer, Joe Kelby, who was in charge of that stuff, and he had showed me all of the depth of material they had. And I called my friend Jerry Harmon, who was working for the Forest Service, and he brought some big trucks down, and we just took everything and got it undercover. Mm-hmm. Later, I contacted Kenny Moore, the superintendent of the railroad in Sacramento, and told him what we did, and he said, yeah, okay. So we got it all, and that was in 1989. And the real truth of the matter is we know more about the railroad in this area in 1909 than we do in 1989, because computers, the real strength of the collection, besides the numerous photos and maps, I mean, thousands of maps and photos, the real strength is the correspondence. I mean, we have correspondence going back to the 1880s, you know, our archives. And we recognized it as an incredible resource for the region. And we're housed in a building here in Dunsmuir now. And it's a good type building with humidity and heat control and everything else. So it's in a good place right now. But I don't feel like it. But I noticed the other day I'm all gray and I'm 77. So sooner or later, this stuff is going to have to leave the county. We haven't been able to get anybody interested in it. You know,
one of our listeners can pick up the mantle when you and Jerry retire.
Yeah,
from that.
we're not planning to anytime soon, but it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
All we do now is meet every Friday and catalog and organize and scan and whatever. I mean, for instance, the station at Siskiyou, we have a drawing of that from 1886. An original linen drawing of the track and the tunnels and all that. I mean, we have original drawings for all of it. Colstein, Mistletoe, Steinman, you name it. Ashland. Mm-hmm. We have maps of Ashland going, I think, at least to 1904, but possibly earlier.
In all the research you've done, both for your books and looking through these archives, how do you think the story of the Siskiyou Line reflects or is different from railroads elsewhere? It seems like it might have a little bit of a different story on a micro level, but still is kind of reflective of this larger trend of railroads. Because this was a really significant chunk that connected Oregon and California. And in 1887, that Golden Spike meant the U.S. was completely encircled by rail. So, you know, I just wanted you to speak a little bit about that. You know, the story of the Siskiyou Line is compared to other railroad stories.
Well, over time, when they built the railroads initially, they were really cheap. I mean, they were watching the pocketbook. They did have, of course, some land grants and whatnot, But the thing was, is this was shoestring businesses to start out with, and it was cutthroat, with one company failing and another buying it. So the Siskiyou line is like that. It's got multiple original railway companies that were merged. But the thing is that it served the areas where the people were initially. But as the economy moved forward and the West grew, I'm talking back in the teens and 20s, the idea was to speed up the railroad. And the Siskiyou line is not a fast railroad. And so they built this. It was one of multiple projects that were done on the SP in the 20s, 1920s. And this was called the Black Butte Cutoff. And it went all the way up the Klamath Basin, up to Chemult, Chiloquin, and then over and down Salt Creek, I think it is, down to Eugene. And they were able to cut hours off of the trip, you know, a trip between, say, the Bay Area and Portland. So that's very common in the industry. The next thing is that they shortlined it to the corp because local work on the railroad requires manpower and it's very expensive. So the trend in the industry was to shortline places where there's a lot of local business and let them deal with, you know, the employees necessary and everything else. And it was part of the regular trimming and economy on the railroad. The other factor on the Siskiyou line is in 1968, White City was the number two producer of wood forest products on the entire Oregon division. And I couldn't believe that when I read it, but it makes sense. I mean, the amount of lumber that we were getting out of there in the 70s and 80s is insane. It's all gone.
I kind of have a two-part question to follow up on that. Like, do you think that things would have been different had the Buckrock Tunnel route been built as it was originally envisioned? And then part two of that is, like, what do you think Yreka and Ashland would look like if they weren't removed off the main trunk of the railroad? Do you think that that has impacted market access and how big these communities got?
Well, to answer your first question, I don't think the Buckrock Tunnel would have made any difference. It would have still been in the grade, just a different approach. You know, it's still one of the steepest mainline grades around, 3.3% in places. And it would have been the same through Buckrock. We have the drawings, as you know, Chelsea. And that whole alignment would have not really made much difference. It still would have been very steep and very curvy. And the tunnels would be the restrictions. But to your other question, Yreka was, of course, connected by the Yreka Western initially because the railroad did not go to Yreka, the county seat, but Yreka grew because of being a county seat. And then Senator Collier, I guess, lobbied to have the I-5 go through Yreka. But as far as Ashland is concerned, there was a roundhouse there. There was shops to repair cars and stuff. And it was a terminal, employed a lot of people, not a major terminal, but it was the railroad terminal, not Medford. And they systematically trimmed it back. And then since there was crews based at Medford, they just ran us down there to Medford. But the big, you know, the source of supply on the south end of the mountains is Dunsmuir. And so that's where the trains came from, off the main line, and terminated in Ashland. And then they had locals that came out of Medford and went, took the train into White City and exchanged the loads and empties and whatnot. Mm-hmm. One of the locals was called The Brothers. And there's a restaurant in Ashland called The Brothers, I think.
I wonder if it's named after that. That's so interesting. And just really quick before we sign off, the train is ended at the moment over the Siskiyous, but it still goes north from Medford. Is that correct?
Yeah, I assume so. I don't know for sure. I couldn't tell you, but I wouldn't be surprised that there's limited service north.
There's so few trains going through that it's hard to even remember if we're still active. You know, I never have to stop for the train tracks in Southern Oregon. So,
you know, it's a freight railroad and freight is withered on the vine. Wolf Creek used to have a mill. There were some others further up.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what's happening north of Medford, or actually north of Ashland, really. Because I don't know how far their last train out of Weed went. I'm sure it went to Roseburg, you know, in Douglas County.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do a little bit more research into that. Well, John, thank you so much for talking about the Siskiyou Line with us today on the Underground History on Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. Show producers are Charlie Zimmerman, and you can find this episode and many more wherever you get your podcasts.